My fault.
Walking.
Wanted to, maybe you.
Just and I stepped. So I got to get some heal.
Good evening. I'd like to call the Monroe City Council meeting to order. This is the regular business meeting for Tuesday, August 26th. The time is approximately 7:03 p.m. Ms. Smoot, would you go ahead and call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Hanford, Cutaback, Rasmussen, Camp, and Gehring.
Thank you. I heard from Councilmember Gamble earlier this evening. He indicated that he would be anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes late. And Councilmember Davis had already announced in previous meetings that he would be absent this evening, so he's excused. Let's go ahead and begin with the Pledge of Allegiance. Councilmember Gamble, will you lead us?
He's not here tonight.
Oh.
Councilmember Gamble will not be leading us tonight. Councilmember Gehring will.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The first item that we have on this evening's agenda is a presentation from the Washington State Department of Corrections. Can you please come forward? Yes, right there. And thank you very much for coming.
Oh, absolutely. No, first let me thank the council and Mr. Mayor and Elizabeth for setting this up. I appreciate the invite, and I have some handouts here to pass around. I don't have a PowerPoint with me. I gave a PowerPoint presentation at the Redmond Rotary Club a while back, and we never even got to the PowerPoint. Any questions? Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff. It's just kind of long. So what I did for orientation purposes was I'm handing out everybody a map of the complex. Mm-hmm. So when we have some discussion, we have some context for that. And then what I did is I did make some copies of the PowerPoint and some informational handouts also about the complex. So I think there's less of those. There might be one of each.
Okay.
But I appreciate the invite to come down and have some discussion about the complex, because I do believe, and I know you understand also, that I think we're a pretty significant partner in the community here. And the extension, the invite to come down here, I hope just continues to further that. I know, Mary, you and I have chatted before, and the chief have chatted before, and I appreciate that conversation. So I'm just going to walk right through this, and I know that it's probably more interesting to you when you ask the questions that you really want to hear about, but I'm going to skip the historical oversight, you know, when the place was built in 1908, et cetera, et cetera, and get straight to what we are about today. So the complex houses 2,500 offenders, and we manage offenders from every custody range within the agency. That means we have maximum security, close custody, medium security, and minimum security offenders housed up there for a total of 2,500. We have three real special missions for the agency. At the Special Offenders Unit, we have 400 plus beds which house the agency's most seriously mentally ill offenders. And as you all know, with the cuts that have occurred over the last decade or so, especially in mental health funding, prisons have become the de facto mental health facilities. And that's certainly true for our agency. But the SOU houses the most seriously mentally ill. And we have a maximum security housing unit in that complex within the SOU. And we have close custody, and then we have medium housing up there also. We have a huge mental health footprint in terms of the staffing for mental health. Each unit is managed by a psychologist. We have three or four, depending on the unit, correctional mental health counselors, plus a prisons division classification counselor. And of course, those units are managed by a CUS. So in terms of the hierarchy of the organization, so I'm the superintendent, what we call the Superintendent A of the complex. And shortly after the murder of Correctional Officer Bendel, less than a year after that, the agency created two Superintendent B positions to help the superintendent manage the entire complex. So the Special Offenders Unit, where the mentally ill are managed, that's supervised by Superintendent Margaret Gilbert. She couldn't be here tonight. She's on vacation, actually. And then the other Twin Rivers unit, that's managed by a superintendent B by the name of Dan White. He started in April of this year. And we'll get to that unit in just a second. SOU is the scariest place. It's the place that keeps me awake at night. That's where we have the highest rates of staff assaults. That's where we have the highest rates of negative offender interactions with each other. It's something that we continuously always work on. In fact, it's not fair to compare the rates of violence with the rest of the agency in comparison with 400-bed mentally ill offenders. But we've had some serious offender assaults and serious staff assaults out there. So it's a scary place, but we do a great job of managing that, and we have a dedicated staff. It takes a special kind of person to work with the mentally ill. So the staff that work out there in that particular unit, our community owes them a great debt. The Washington State Reformatory, which is what some people would call the flagship of the agency, is the second oldest prison in the state, Walla Walla being the first, being a territorial prison when it was built 125 years ago. At the reformatory, we house 772 offenders. So our capacity is 700, our emergency capacity is 772, and that's what we're running at right now. What that means is it's a four-tier high, old, open barred cell front style prison, the kind you see in the movies, so to speak. We double bunk the upper tiers is what we've done. And that's just because we have a population problem within the agency. So we've double bunked at the reformatory. Not an ideal situation. They're small cells, but we do what we have to do within the agency. There's no capacity, there's no will amongst legislators or anywhere else right now to build more prisons. So, yeah.
I'm sorry, some clarification. You double bunk.
Double bunk. So most of the cells in the reformatory are single bunk cells, just okay. A single inmate. The upper tier, so 72 additional beds, we double bunk with offenders. And it's kind of like first in, first out. So a new chin comes in on Monday, new guys go in, we move the guys out to the single cell housing. But at the reformatory, the primary mission that we have there for the agency, beyond just managing and housing the offenders, is we house the most seriously ill, health-wise, offenders in the agency. So we have an inpatient dialysis unit where routinely we have 6 to 8 dialysis offenders on dialysis routinely at the reformatory, and that's where they're housed. We have an inpatient, kind of like a hospice program. We always have men that are up there in their last days, so they receive critical care. And with our proximity to such a huge healthcare footprint down the I-5 corridor, many of the men who get seriously ill come to the reformatory for treatment. Then we take them out in the community. So that happens quite often. Typical example is we have a man that we just transported by helicopter from the state penitentiary over to Harborview. We accepted him to the reformatory and we're doing a hospital watch on him down there, but whether or not he makes it back to the infirmary, he's a seriously ill man. But so that's the primary purpose for the reformatory in terms of beyond housing offenders. We serve as the really ill guys. Then a Twin Rivers unit, which I'm sure everybody's aware of, another 400-plus bed facility, we house and we had the very first sex offender treatment program at the special offenders unit there. So we meant our capacity for treatment at any given time is 200 inpatient offenders at a time with an outpatient count of anywhere from 40 to 60 offenders in post-treatment. Our program runs anywhere from 9 months to 18 months depending on the level of seriousness and the amount of treatment that the guys need. And subsequent to, we just celebrated the 25th year, as a matter of fact, of the sex offender treatment program at SOU. So the reality is, TRU, Twin Rivers Unit, has been around for 25 years now. The SOU has been around for 26 years, so been a huge footprint on this community for quite an extended period of time. So those are really the big three services we perform, missions we perform for the agency. We take care of the seriously mentally ill, we take care of the seriously critically ill offenders, and we house the sex offender treatment program over at Twin Rivers. So, some other things. I mean, when you think about the complex, it's no different than a city. Everything that we manage out here in the communities, that you manage out here in the communities, from police to fire to healthcare to everything else it takes, that's what the complex is all about. It's a significant responsibility housing 2,500 men. And so, my mission and responsibility as a superintendent is to ensure, first and foremost, that we run a safe prison. So I want to talk about safety first of all, because subsequent to January 29, 2011, when Officer Jamie Bennell was murdered, the agency went on a significantly huge push. Now, I've been in the business for 32 years. I've never seen a push towards safety like we've done the last 2 years. I want to talk a little bit about some of what we've done in the last 2 years to increase staff and offender safety. When Jamie was murdered, nobody in our agency, from the secretary on down, had ever experienced a line of duty death. So it was brand new to everybody. All of our line of duty deaths had occurred before that. An interesting note is we held earlier this year a line of duty death recognition ceremony for a man by the name of Benjamin Marshall, who was a stationary plant engineer at the reformatory in 1951, who was murdered by two offenders during an escape attempt. No one knew that. They were never recognized in the National Hall of Fame, in our local criminal justice down agency down in Burien at the Wall or down in Olympia. So some staff doing some research discovered that, and so he brought family from, he didn't have any immediate family left, just some grandkids. We brought them together, we held a line of duty death recognition ceremony and got him to do honors. Just a little side note there. So Jamie's death wasn't the first line of duty death that we had at the reformatory. Safety. Beyond the physical plant stuff, additional cameras, increased radios, mics, the addition of personal carry OC, oleoresin capsicum, you know, the pepper mace that we've given to all custody staff, there are some significant improvements and changes we've made. We've implemented two to open, two to close as an example. Two staff always to open a building or to close a building. Never do we have just one staff member in a location at a time when we're opening or closing. We instituted monthly place safety musters where every staff, every supervisor in the entire complex is responsible monthly to marshal their troops and have a 1-hour place safety muster. It's focused specifically on the area that they work. Who knows the dangers better than the area they work and the staff who work in those areas? So in addition to that, there's been policy changes that you know, control how offenders are moved or allowed to move around the facility or around the complex. And we've increased staffing in some areas. We've increased staffing in medium custody across the agency. There's still some staffing fixes that I would like to implement. But I just think it's important that the safety of our friends, your community members that work at that complex, that you understand is something that we take significantly serious. So how many of you know someone that works at the complex? Probably most everybody. We have, it's amazing, every time I go to send out an all-user email, it goes to 1,200 plus employees. That's pretty large. I'm not real familiar with the total population in the city of Monroe, but I think 1,200 is probably a significant percentage of that population in terms of just the staff that work, and we add the 2,500 men that are housed there. That's a huge population. A couple of really unique things that we're doing in the state of Washington, that we're doing at the Monroe Correctional Complex that you may not be aware of. In the news and under heavy scrutiny right now is the use of solitary confinement, maximum security for long-term use of maximum security for offenders. In the past, it was always take your troublesome guys, incapacitate them for as long as you can, let them grow old in maximum security, and they grow out of their problematic behaviors. But we also know that they suffer serious mental health consequences as a result of long-term solitary confinement. So lawsuits around the state raised our awareness to something needs to be done with the deep end of our population, even being those guys who are most problematic to us, most highest risk offenders when they get released, especially if they're released straight from maximum security to the streets. So we needed to start doing something with them. So we solicited help from the Vera Institute out of Washington, D.C., University of Cincinnati, which has this great criminal justice research center. And we started programming in two of our maximum security units in our state. At the state penitentiary, we house our security threat group gangs. That's where most of our most serious, dangerous gang members are housed. And so within their maximum security population, their mission-specific responsibility is to treat gang offenders. And they have a program called Ceasefire and a program called Mock and blah, blah, blah. I don't want to talk about the penitentiary right now. What we have up here, since we have such a concentration of the mentally ill offenders, we have what we call a RAP program. It's Reintegration and Progression program. And what we try to do with our maximum security vendor, we bought 8 maximum security chairs, and we put them in one room. We call it congregate programming. And for the first time in many of these guys, 5, 10, 15 years, they've been locked up long term because of the level of threat they present to us, we put them in rooms together. And we've started to allow them to socialize them with other offenders. Beyond that, we're providing cognitive behavioral treatment for these guys. The whole goal is to start to get them re-socialized, get them out of maximum security, start progressing down through the custody ranks, so that when they do release, they come to us at less risk than what it is if we release them straight from maximum security. The success rate releasing a guy from maximum security out to our streets is about 5%. Mm-hmm. Most of them recidivate, and most of that's a violent crime. Another statistic I want to talk about. In the past, when I started in this agency back in 1982, we had a population of 6,000 offenders in total confinement. Our agency today houses just under 18,000 in total confinement. The 1980s brought about tough-on-crime laws and new sentencing laws, and our population projection was to have about 18,000 in total confinement 2 years ago. The guys that do those population forecasts are right on. They're geniuses, because we were right at where they projected. That's why we built Stafford Creek. That's why we built Airway Heights. That's why we built Coyote Ridge, all these 2,100, 2,500 bed prisons. So the issue right now is there's no will to build more prisons, so we're going to use the capacity that we have right now, i.e. double bunking and stuff like that. Where was I going with that? The population projections. Oh, who we house. So in the past, we housed everybody from burglars, car thieves, all the way up to murderers. Today, 85% of our population is convicted of a violent offense. And the remaining 15%, most of them have some kind of previous conviction or history of a violent offense. Prisons don't house who it is we used to house anymore. It's a different cat. It's a different breed. And they're violent guys. And so it's incumbent upon us not only to look at ourselves for safety, you know, how we protect ourselves, but it's also our significant responsibility to make sure the population is as safe as they can be. To that end, we recently had, I don't know if you know it, but Monroe Correctional Complex is often visited by interested legislators, huge interest groups. We most recently had the senior advisor, her name is Jamie Filner, the senior advisor to the United States Human Rights Watch. They came out because they are seriously scrutinizing the use of force with the mentally ill offenders across the country. So, you know, Washington's a pretty progressive state. She wanted to come out and see how we did it. Most secretaries of an agency, when the human rights says we want to come in and scope you out, they say, no, you're not welcome, thanks. Bernie Warner, our current secretary, says, come on in, we're transparent, we've got nothing to hide. So she came out here and she spent a day with us. And she walked away at the end of that day asking us to use one of the videos of our use of force with one of our mentally ill guys, edit what we need to edit for protection purposes, for the offender's identity and stuff. She wants to use that as an example of the professionalism in which we manage the mental health up here, especially when it comes to the use of force. So I was really proud of that. That was a pretty cool thing. The biggest push going on in our prisons right now has to do with the Prison Rape Elimination Act. So PREA, I don't know if you've heard of PREA or are familiar with that. So every facility in the state is being audited. We're not going to be audited until sometime next year. In fact, our date hasn't even been set. But in advance of that, the complex, primarily the reformatory, was chosen by our secretary to have this group called the MOS group. They're a consultant group. And they're all made up of former practitioners, so they understand the business, former wardens and stuff like that. Some of them came from all the way from the line on up. And so they came out and spent a week doing a sexual safety assessment of our facility. We have yet to get that report back, but the early returns are it's pretty much a safe place. When you think of prison rape, the stereotypical prison rape you see on TV, that's a rare event. It really is a rare event. Now, I'm not going to say it doesn't happen. It hasn't happened since I've been up here in 2 years. I don't know when it last happened at Monroe. But we do have a lot of PREA-related complaints made by offenders. The majority of those are into sexual harassment kind of sort of complaints. Or another offender touched me inappropriate type sort of complaint. So it's something that we take real seriously. It's something that the federal law requires that we manage our prisons consistent with a whole bunch of different standards that our secretary and our governor, Mr. Inslee, have said we're going to meet. And so the agency has taken that very seriously. It's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. I mean, the standards, to meet those standards, it's just a ton of work. And it takes a while to get prepared. Fortunately, Washington State took that law very seriously when it first came out back in 2006, and we're way down the road towards compliance with everything the standards say. So it's not a big stretch for us to, when we get our audit, to pass that audit. I'm curious about what kind of questions you have, because I really want to spend the rest of my time answering questions that you haven't answered.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Cuddeback.
Thank you for coming tonight.
Oh, you're most welcome.
Just a question about what is the difference between a penitentiary and a correctional complex?
The name.
That's it?
Pretty much the name. The only difference between the state penitentiary, which there's only one of.
Is that Walla Walla?
That's Walla Walla.
Okay.
Is they house death row.
Okay. So that's the only difference between that and Monroe.
It is. Except within their close custody housing units, we have them manage our most serious security threat groups. And right now, that's the Serenials and Rutanials in our state. They're the ones that cause us the biggest problems. Every facility has gangs, all the way from Serenials, Rutanials, you name it, Crips, Bloods, they're all there. But the Serenios and the Norteños, primarily the Serenios, are a very troublesome group. They're a violent group, and they're always causing problems. So when I talked about mission-specific housing, we're having Mentally Ill up here at Monroe. Down there, the animal security threat group. So that's a difference between the two. But in terms of range of sentences and types of offenders and all that, it's all the same. It's the same across the board in every prison. It used to be the craziest, the worst, were housing the penitentiary, and everybody else got the light guys. Not the case. That's just not the case anymore.
And you had mentioned that the prisoners have, it's changed. We have the most violent criminals currently. Why is that? I mean, why has it become, we don't have room and space for the wide variety there used to be of the, you know, the more petty offenses, and so we only house the violent, but has the rate changed? Has the type of crimes changed over the last couple decades? Why?
So here's why we house only the most seriously violent offenders. Because we're not going to build another prison in this state. Not
so
this
we're
state.
Just at capacity, so we're just not housing the...
Correct. So we have to make a decision. Who are we going to spend our money on to house in prisons? Where are we going to get the biggest bang for our buck? So we take the highest risk offenders, and that's what we put in prisons. And that's how
so
we got
the type of crimes over the last few decades haven't really changed. It's just we're running out of space and we're only housing a certain amount.
Correct. And I think there's been a large emphasis over the last decade in different programs, alternative programs to incarceration at the local and state and county level.
And then how closely do you guys work with Matthew House?
Matthew House is great.
Aren't they?
They do such a fantastic service for the friends and family of offenders that come up here and visit.
Yeah.
So Linda and I, we communicate. My wife, Lori, is here tonight. She drops off water for the house and stuff like that. They do a great service. We work really close together.
Okay. Yeah, they are great. Thank you.
Councilmember Kemp.
Thank you. Thank you for coming tonight.
Oh, absolutely.
Appreciate it. The first thing, and Councilmember Cuttaback kind of started in that direction, what kind of interaction do you have with the city? When I was in the Citizens Academy for the police department, they talked about the interaction, investigative units that would work at the prison and that kind of thing. But I was curious, what other kind of areas? You mentioned Matthew House. Are there other, I don't know, fire department? I'm just trying to think of something.
So much with the fire department. Most of our interaction with law enforcement, of course, is they're responding to crimes that are committed at the facility.
Right.
Our investigators.
And you mentioned Matthew House, so I was wondering if there are others as well.
Not so much there, but in terms of interactions with the city, I know we have some relationships with our horticulture program, and I know a lot of the flowers that you see in the city are grown up there at the complex and shared. I know we have a crew that works every once in a while down the town to help out with city projects and cleaning and stuff like that. So that's our primary interaction.
Okay.
Last year, we sponsored a growing a whole bunch of corn, and we invited the community out to help us plant corn, and 2/3 of the harvest went back to the food bank and stuff like that. So we want to increase that kind of stuff, part of which I'm going to brag about tonight. We are winning first and second place prizes at the fair for our program vegetables. Our pumpkins took number one earlier this week. So.
Got one more question, too. Two memorable experiences with the prison was the open house, I believe, in 2000 or 2004. And then the Chamber of Commerce had a tour up there. It was really an eye-opener, both in terms of just seeing process, seeing the structure of the building, seeing the old part, and hearing some of the history. And you mentioned that you did have people, you do have legislators coming to the prison. Are you still doing that?
Absolutely.
Are there opportunities?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things I wanted to make sure I left the council tonight was an invite to come up here. It's a long day. If you want to focus it or break it up into three different trips, that'd probably be better. Because if you want to tour the whole place, I mean, it's 365 acres, five different individual perimeters. So, yeah, if there's an interest in going to one place today and one place tomorrow, yeah, we can set that up. No problem whatsoever.
Thank you.
But I do. I mean, I've got 1,200 people that work up there. That's a big footprint. On that. That's a lot of help in this community. Not everybody, of course, lives here and stuff. But, it's a part of this place, and it needs to be known. One of the things we're doing in prisons also is trying to define how it is we can better be a community partner. And not just a partner, but a part of the community, and not be a blight. Prisons used to be the blight on the community. We've got a lot of guys up there that are interested in restorative justice, interested in giving back to the communities. I mean, the volunteer programs that we run up there that inmates participate in that wind up giving back to the community, everything from the bicycle program to the wheelchair repair programs to the quilting and the knitting programs that we have up there, a lot of stuff goes right back into our communities, and we have a lot of men that are interested in doing so. So opportunities to do so, we look forward to.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Councilmember Cuddeback.
So just a question about the volunteers. How many volunteers do you have up there? And I did have somebody come to my Rotary Club and talk about the bike program. Can you, know a little bit about that?
Sure,
about
absolutely.
Can you just say a couple words about that? What
so the volunteer, the volunteer program that we have, so we have over 750 individual volunteers, 256 different volunteer programs. Many of them are faith-based volunteer programs. But then there's been some long-term volunteer groups there. The Concerned Lifers Organization, which was formed back in the 70s, the Black Rivers Caucus, which was formed back in the early 80s. So some very long-term volunteer programs. And in fact, the bicycle repair is a volunteer program. Even though one of our correctional officers, Wayne, he manages most of that, but we have other volunteers in the community that come in. And with a group of interested defenders, 2 to 3 times a night, however many times the volunteers can get together and come out there, we take them out to our hobby shop, and that's where they receive donated bikes from sheriff's department, different law enforcement, different locations that donate the bikes to us. Mm-hmm. They repair them and they return them. We did over 300 bikes just during Christmas Christmas season last year. So it's a really cool program, and it's a way for the men to give back to them. So.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Herzog, and really appreciated the presentation this evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next presentation that we have on the agenda is a short primer on the city's various funds, sponsored by, brought to you by Diane Nelson.
Number 12.
What's that? Number 12.
We've started into the budget process, and so this is sort of to start it off for you guys. A few months back, I sent out the budget calendar, but I'm sure everyone hasn't committed it to memory. And so I just wanted to refresh you. Right now, staff is working on their budget worksheets, and they're all due into finance this coming Friday. And then first week of September, I dump it into a comprehensive document, and then the month of September is spent with the mayor and Jean and myself going through it, and the mayor meets with all the department heads and goes through the programs, and at the same time, the mayor's crafting the budget message that will accompany the preliminary budget, and then according to the state laws that dictate the dates for the budget process. You guys get it the first day of October, the budget message and the preliminary budget. So then the month of October and November, we basically will go over the budget with you guys and the city council. And hopefully it'll be adopted in December. Just to give you a heads up, the instructions that were given from the mayor to staff when the budget worksheets first went out in July was to request a status quo budget and to make a separate list of any new programs or new mandates that are required separate, and also then another list of all the things that you would like to have that you are not currently doing right now. And so just wanted to give you that as a heads up, and to gear up for looking at the budget, I wanted to just do a real quick primer tonight on the funds that the city works with. Government accounting's broken down into funds to demonstrate compliance with how with various state and federal legislation to make sure that to demonstrate that we are complying with the mandates given to us on how to spend money. Some examples would be we have a separate street fund because we receive gas tax money, and that in the state law calls out a separate fund so that we can demonstrate that that money is just being spent on streets. Another example are the utility funds. We have separate utility funds to demonstrate compliance that the money people are paying, the ratepayers are paying monthly on their bill, it's not going to police or parks. It's going strictly to running the utilities. So that's why we have the various funds. It's to protect the taxpayer and demonstrate compliance. Other entities like fire districts, park districts, school districts, those entities each have one fund that they deal with. Because we're a general purpose government, we have many funds. So, yeah, usually in September when Chief Jamie over at the fire department goes, my budget's all done, I always think, well, yeah, you only have one fund. You've got a lot more to deal with. The state law in Washington State delegates the accounting rules for local and state government to the auditor's office. And the auditor's office has developed the BARS manual that contain all the accounting rules. And BARS stands for Budgeting, Accounting, Reporting System. The veteran calls it the BARS. And so I like to say I'm very familiar with BARS. No matter how that sounds, I know.
I guess.
But anyway, the BARS manual breaks down the funds into various types, and there's different rules for each type of fund. The types are the general fund, which is your operations or your current expense fund, is also called. Then there are special revenue funds for revenues that are restricted for specific activity, and those are all governmental activities. And then there's debt service funds, where we pay our principal and interest on GO debt, general obligation debt, not utility debts. They go in the utility funds. You have to have a separate debt service fund. Then there's capital improvement project funds where for building infrastructure, not operations. There are enterprise funds for anything that's run like a business. For instance, our utilities are all enterprise funds. If you have a municipal golf course or a municipal pool, that's going to be an enterprise fund. And there's different rules for that. We have internal service funds, and those are for funds that perform services for the other funds. For instance, a real common one is the fleet. And the reason you do that is because it's easier, it's a more efficient way to manage your money if you know how much are we spending on fuel, how much are we spending on fleet, on how much on equipment, and then they charge each department appropriately for their use of that stuff. But if each department has their own budget for that, you can really easily lose track with the many funds where the money's going. So this it's a more of a management tool, the internal service funds. Big governments like the state, they have central services where all their office supplies, you can't go out, if you're in a state department, you can't go out and buy office supplies, you have to get it through central services. And that way they can control office supplies. You know, you can't have the Corinthian leather embossed book, you have to go get, you know, you have to get the cheap one that central services has bought, you know, and it's a way to control spending. Mm-hmm. And then the last type of funds are fiduciary or agency type funds, and those we generally do not budget for. It's when we hold money for another agency. For instance, school mitigation fees. We put it in an agency fund and then remit it to the school district because we don't want to call that revenue because it's not city revenue. So that's why it's just a separate agency fund. Our risk management reserve is a fiduciary fund because it's not really part of our operations. It's just money we've set reserved for, you know, in the unfortunate event of a lawsuit where our insurance doesn't cover. And then there's things called permanent funds. The city of Monroe does not have any permanent funds. It's where someone bequeaths an estate or an asset, and the city can use the money earned on that for operations, but they can't spend the asset itself. When I worked for the city of Redmond years ago, they had a cemetery. It was like that. It was a permanent fund, which they eventually got rid of, and I don't know how they did it. But anyway, each fund, each individual fund is its own set of self-balancing accounts. That means that each fund has its own cash account. Each fund has its own revenues and expenditures and fund balance. And an accurate way to look at it would be as if each fund was a separate checking account. Like if you had a checkbook for each fund, and that would be a very accurate way to look at the funds. And so, with that being said, each of you should have at your place a silk-colored sheet that lists all the funds. And I'll just real quick, I'm not going to bore you with this by reading this whole thing to you. But the colors are the designated types of fund. You can see there's a general fund, and then it shows the revenue sources. Like the general fund, I'll just go through the general because that's the main one. That's where most of our tax money goes. Property taxes, sales tax, utility taxes, licenses, state shared revenues, like we get a thing called PUD privilege and grant money, and fees for services and citations, fines, and forfeitures. And that money has, that fund has the least amount of restrictions on it. That's any governmental purpose you can spend the money on. All the other funds have restrictions, you'll notice, in on their expenditures. And for the City of Monroe, we have the general fund, the contingency fund, and the donation fund. We call out the donation fund strictly for managerial reasons. I believe council at one time asked to have it called out, but for reporting purposes to the state, we're required to combine all three of those funds into one fund, general fund, for financial reporting purposes. But for our accounting books and our general ledger and management purposes, we have them as three separate funds. And then you have all your special revenue funds, and that's like, you know, the street mitigation fees, the street fund, which is for street maintenance, that's the one with the gas tax. Transportation concurrency is our impact fees. That can only be spent on growth-related street projects. So if you're adding lanes to a, if you're just repairing a road, you can't use that money. But if you're adding lanes, adding capacity, you can use that money for the added capacity part, but not for the whole project, because part of that street was already there. So it gets kind of tricky of what you can and can't use the money on. And then there's, you know, the lodging tax, then drug seizures, and REIT money, which is restricted to what's in the comp plan. And so as you can see on the right-hand column there, as you go down, those are the names of the actual funds we have in each type of fund. And so if you have any questions, give me a holler. But yeah, it's pretty pretty self-explanatory here, this particular chart. But if you have questions about particular restrictions, please give me a holler. That's the way.
Are you finished with your presentation?
I'm sorry?
Are you finished with your presentation?
I think so.
Okay. Councilmember Camp has a question.
Thank you. Salvation Army Fund?
Yeah. When people pay on their utility bill, on your utility bill at the bottom, there's where you can make a donation to Salvation Army.
Yeah. Right.
And it's for people who are struggling with their utility bill. And we take that money, put it in an agency fund, remit it to the Salvation Army, and then when people are struggling with their bills, we refer them to the Salvation Army.
So are we keeping all the funds the entire time and just giving it as demanded or requested by the Salvation Army? Or do
we are not allowed to regulate how the Salvation Army spends. All we can tell them is that the money has to go to City of Monroe utility bill payments.
No, but what I'm asking is, so the money comes in and we just keep it long enough to transfer the funds? We don't keep it for them and then give it to them? Okay.
No, no. About once a quarter maximum. I try to do it more often.
Okay, I think you've answered my question.
Going over to the
fund. Right, thank you.
So, Diane, by having the name Salvation Army Fund, does that mean, so it, that's a fund that's been authorized by the state that we can collect for, and by donating to that fund, people are able to write it off because it's going to the Salvation Army, even though really what's happening is it's staying here, and we're just reapplying, we're just applying it to people that, okay.
It's a tax deduction, and mm-hmm. The state had nothing to do with it. It's it was a city council action.
Okay.
And we're just the conduit for someone wanting to make a donation to the Salvation Army.
Okay.
So we get the money, we give it to the Salvation Army.
Okay.
And then if people come to us saying, I lost my job, I can't pay my bill and all, we go call the Salvation Army, they have a program to help you.
Okay. For the record, I'd like to show that Councilmember Gamble entered the chambers at 7:42. And you owe us a Pledge of Allegiance next week. Okay.
You owe us.
Councilmember Camp, do you have any other questions?
I'm done. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you. Diane, for bond compliance, what is it, the combination of the blue, you know, to have enough money in there, or where is that money housed?
Under the enterprise fund is all of our utility activity. And because utilities are run like a business, they're in the enterprise funds. But you can see we have, six funds there, or seven, eight funds? And what it is the bond revenue bond reserve debt reserve fund, the very bottom one in that brown box on the right. That's where we have our reserve for the bond covenant. And also the bond covenant requires us to have a certain ratio of revenue
right.
to expenditures in each of those funds.
Okay. What about the Kelsey? What about the money we took out for Kelsey?
Okay. North Kelsey is a capital improvement fund. It has nothing to do with... that debt's GO debt.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the difference.
General obligation debt. That pink stripe there that says debt service funds, currently our only GO debt are the North Kelsey bonds, and so we're paying the principal and interest out of there.
And we don't have to have a certain amount in compliance to meet that obligation for a GO
general
bond?
General obligation means that the government's full taxing authority is
just based on
that.
Okay.
Debt,
okay.
Which means... we would have to go to our property tax and sales tax money if we couldn't meet it.
Sure. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you, Mayor. Diane, again, I just want to say thanks, and I appreciate the this chart is great. It's a great reference. This is my eighth time through this, and we've seen this, and I need the refresher every single time and multiple times during the budget cycle, and so I really do appreciate seeing this and where E20 comes from. Obviously, we'll be talking about each one more, but just the way the budget is presented and the work that you give us, it enables us to make wise decisions, and so this just helps, so I just want to say thanks.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, any other questions or comments from council? Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Dan.
Okay, the next item that we have on the agenda is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial decision or matter, rather, subject to a public hearing. We do have a sign-in sheet. Do we have anybody sign in tonight? Nope. Is there any member of the public here that would like to speak tonight? Anybody want to come up and talk? Anybody at all? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Councilmember Gehring.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Gehring. I have a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Next item on the agenda is unfinished business. This is AB 14109, approval of ordinance number 010-2014 regarding Eaglemont Division Number 1 Planned Residential Development, first and final reading. Paul?
Thank you, Mayor. Today we're bringing the PRD approval for you, the Planned Residential Development aspect of Eaglemont. If you recall, last month you approved the final plat, and this will close that approval process. And that final plan can be recorded pretty much after your action tonight. All the improvements basically except tree trees and final asphalt in place and what's not been completed is fully bonded. And then finish this process and have the village start bringing in some applications for building houses. But be happy to take any questions you might have at this point.
And I recognize this wasn't in the agenda this evening. Rather, it was on the agenda, but the materials weren't handed out. So I'll understand, obviously if you have any questions anytime, that's fine. But if you want a moment to look at it or if you have additional questions in normal, that's totally understandable. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and move to waive council rules procedure requiring a second reading of an ordinance before adoption.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Gehring. I have a second from Councilmember Camp. And then I have a couple of lights. So this is discussion on the motion. I have Councilmember Hanford and then Cutaback.
Thank you. So just question for clarification, why the need to waive the rules for tonight and get it done tonight?
The on the advice of our attorney and getting this process completed, this taking quite a while to complete this process, felt it was best to take this final step and basically close the record on this process and move on. There's been really no interest in this or questions about this process that we've been going through, so we thought it'd be really wouldn't be any problem to request first and final commitment.
Yeah, and would you yield for a...
Sure.
If I remember correct, I mean, this is something that we actually asked for last time we were together, if I'm not mistaken. Was it to be put on here for first and final? So it was a request from us to put on.
Indeed.
That vaguely sounds familiar, so yeah. That's why I asked for the clarification.
Right,
thank
cool.
you.
Yeah, are there any other questions or comments?
That was my question.
Okay. All right. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Okay. And let me close this window. And Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd move to adopt ordinance number 010-2014, approving the final plan of residential development for the Eaglemont Subdivision, Division 1, PL 2012-03, setting forth supportive findings, providing for severability, and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Gehring, a second from Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. All right. Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is Councilmember Reports. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. Not much other than... my son is going to be a freshman at the high school. He's very excited, and cross-country practice started in for real. There's been summer running, but it started for real this week, and it's an exciting time. A lot of activity at the high school, football, all the fall sports going on. So it's fun going up there. It's the buzz, and it's also going to be the parent of a high school student, which is, you know, it's a, you know, a little nerve-wracking for me, you know. But at the same time, it's a lot of fun. So looking forward to all the activity in the high school this fall. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, just a fun time of year. We had the parade on Saturday that I know a lot of you were involved in. I would have loved to have been there. We had, it was football. It was football season. So while the parade was going on, we had our first weekend of full games up at the high school. Monroe did quite well. Pee-wees did good. The 89ers did well. High school, new high school coach's son is a pretty dang good little athlete. I think he scored 3 touchdowns. He's on the Pee-wee team. So just was a good week or a good weekend overall. I think today was the Chain Lake social, ice cream social, and so kids were meeting teachers today, and just exciting time of the year. So that's about it. I would have loved to have been there at the parade, but we were busy winning 58-12.
Oh. Thank you for representing.
Can't say that.
Got the score in.
And then some. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you, Mayor. Last Thursday, I attended the Snohomish County Cities event. They're putting together another single-page priority list that they've put together in the past. We did an exercise to list various items that we considered higher priorities. It was interesting finding out from different cities what type of priority items they have. It was also the first time I really heard about the issues of train, the impacts of trains in both coal, oil, and just manufacturing train transport issues that are affecting some of the local cities. Like I said, they're putting together another single page. They're going to be sending out a request for information to various selected, so all the cities, so you probably get something in your email. Please respond. They'd like to have as much input as they can. And it was a very good event. I'd encourage other people to attend as well. Last Saturday was a great parade. I just had a blast. I want to thank the Chamber of Commerce, the Masons, the police and fire departments, the city staff, and all the volunteers who did an incredible, safe job. It looks like Halloween as you're going down the parade route and you see all those kids with their bags. And all I could do is just tell them, don't think about me, the candy's coming. Just a blast. Anyway, and that I'd like to wish everybody have a nice Labor Day and See you next week.
Take candy next time, Jim.
Yeah. Well, I thought about it. Actually, I threw some candy at somebody.
Yeah, you did. Nice shot.
Back of the head.
I'm going to start carrying ice.
Bucket?
Yeah. Councilmember Rasmussen. Okay. Councilmember Cutterback.
Echo the parade. It was a great parade, and shout out to the chamber, the school district, because they really helped organize
Principal
that.
Lombard.
Yeah. Yeah, he was wonderful.
That was, yeah, I forgot.
Because this was the first year that Joanne Carbonetti was not running it. So that was a big deal. City staff who were out, police department, and Speedway Chevrolet for donating quite a bit of the cars in the parade. So that was nice. So, yeah, so it was great.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Councilmember Hanford.
Yeah, just to echo everything that's been said, the parade was wonderful. Thank you for all the volunteers, staff. Great time.
Thank you.
Very good.
Let's hop out to staff. Paul.
I'd like to touch upon a few things. I want to talk about a little bit about marijuana. Today was supposed to be the day of a decision about East Monroe from the Rural Command Insurance Board. We've not heard anything. Thinking is that they either put it in snail mail or they may not have completed their decision. So that could be coming anytime. We're planning to come back next month, September, with the finalization on the sign code, a few more tweaks to that. And we're gearing up for enforcement. We're starting to get out there and start the whole sign enforcement program. Lots of other things going on. Just now processing new plans for Bear Mountain Estates, Mexico Hills, and the rezoning of Dave Holborn's property north of Highway 2, west of east of Roosevelt, for about a 10-acre subdivision in there. And we have a pre-app for next week for Tractor Supply. Someone approached me, a couple of weeks ago. And they were interested in the property behind the Jack in the Box at the northwest corner of 2 and Roosevelt. And they are now coming in for a pre-app, and they're in a hurry. They want to get something started. We're talking about I'm trying to remember, 20,000-30,000 square foot building, 20 employees, I think something like that. A good number of employees, but they're basically a farm, agricultural equipment vendor. They're a national company, something like Fleet Farm or just a whole, like an agricultural general store. That'd be a pretty good addition for the firm.
Cool.
On marijuana, I sent a note out earlier today that based on the Attorney General's opinion, cities can exercise local option and add to the list of uses that have to be buffered for marijuana businesses, buffers now include, I have a list here, elementary and secondary schools, playgrounds, recreation centers, or recreation facilities of any sort, child care center, public parks, public transit center, like our park and ride, library, or an arcade where the prime use of the business is an arcade. The Galaxy Theater has some, what do you call them, video machines, but that's not, it's a secondary use. But the arcade that is in the building downtown at former Eddie's would qualify for the buffer for that. But we are able to add private parks, like the one that Councilmember Gary brought up a week or two ago. We can add public trails, which may create some additional coverage in areas if we're trying to maximize the area. And I guess technically we could probably add anything we want that has some basis for requiring buffering, like some kind of gathering spaces. But it seems pretty clear that we, at least at this point, have the authority to expand our buffering requirements. And private parks would certainly make a difference with that. My intent would be to work out the mechanics of this based on your, if you wish to proceed with this, work out the mechanics of exactly what needs to be done. It will involve a map change. At this point, we don't think it involves a change to the ordinance or the code that we've already adopted, since this map is a separate living document that we work with. But I could bring that back and also bring back some new mapping that might show what the results of this might be and determine what action, if any, is necessary from council.
Is that something council members would like to have on an extended agenda to have come back and some options on how to do that and what uses to include? Okay. Oh, Council Member Gehring.
Thank you. And I saw your email earlier, and obviously I was wondering about that before. I know it would come up, and I think for most of our public, a park is a park, whether it's a private park or a public park. And if you have the public parks, I think at least a place to start, because what you had said before was, and rather than just, throwing the whole bucket at it, it'd be at least my preference if you were going to bring something back to, let's start with private parks and then let's kind of move from there. Because I know we have a few of those, and there's the Lord's Lake one in the Frylands. There's the one at the Mountain View Estates that I had brought up before. And there may be, I'm sure there's a couple others that I'm not thinking of where there's, established equipment. I mean, it's clearly a park. It just isn't maintained by the city of Monroe, technically. It'd be my preference to have that specifically included, but I said that last time as well. So if you're looking for opinion, that I'd certainly like to, for whatever you might bring back, private parks would be great. That'd be
Could that include trails too?
And maybe we can discuss that. It didn't, but if that's a recommendation, then maybe and someone else can capitalize.
Sure.
We'll
come back to some.
Great. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Councilmember Hanford.
Yeah, I agree with Councilman Green. Question though, and I feel like we talked about this before, but churches, where does that fall in your list of items? Obviously, for the question of youth groups, kids, gathering during the week.
Right. Well, that's really a good example of maybe another potential target for requiring buffer, because it is a public gathering. Mm-hmm. Place on a regular basis. In fact, the church may have some bearing on that as well, as the potential impact. But it's something that could be considered.
Yeah, I would say to add that to the parks, since definitely youth gather there.
I think we can do that, and if it makes a difference, we can include it, or just simply include it. That the map is going to change as new businesses are established, mm-hmm. or new functions like a new park, mm-hmm. that will change these buffers. So this is going to be somewhat dynamic. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. So I'm understanding then private parks and churches. Okay. Were there any?
I have thoughts, but.
Yeah.
Okay, and obviously we'd be bringing this back for a discussion.
Yeah.
So is there
yeah.
are there any other uses that you would want us to look into as we're doing the initial research?
Is there?
Councilmember Cutaback.
Are
you push the button? I turned.
I know. I'm like button wars. Are there a list of uses that are on other? Ordinances, but not on ours, that you could bring us a sample? I mean, right off the top of my head, I think looking at private parks and churches, but is there anything that we don't have in ours that other, cities do? So I'd be curious to see kind of what the list is, and maybe if we have a list that we can look at, we can decide if it's, something that we need in our community.
I think most jurisdictions are following the state
the same
rules, but I'm sure there are a few that are considering other options.
Trails might be on there.
Because we do have the local option.
Yeah.
It's yet to be tested to be fully defensible.
Sure. But if there's other cities that have, added things on to that, I'd be curious what those are. If we have a list.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll put that on the extended agenda. We'll talk about that when we get to the extended agenda. Sound good? Diane? Okay. Gene?
One thing just to draw council's attention to the preliminary Turning Place alignment that staff has prepared. It's out there on the easel, so if you haven't had a chance to take a look at it, take a look.
And we'll come back to the agendas in just a second. Couple things that I did last Thursday, staff and I met with Walmart. They came in to meet with me and talk a little bit about how things are going on the construction out there, and also talk a little bit about how they're interested in working with different charities and whatnot here in town to you know, just provide support here in our community. And so we spoke for probably about a half hour or so on Thursday. Also, in terms of the railroad crossings that Councilmember Camp mentioned, I know that one of our staff members, Nick, had gone to a meeting with the county, or hosted at the county, to talk about railroad crossings, and I didn't know if he's going to produce any feedback on that, or but I know that staff was there, so if anybody has any questions from what was shared at that meeting, I can certainly ask Paul to follow up with Nick and maybe put together a short email or something that summarizes some of the concerns or issues or check-in points. So I'm seeing heads nod.
Please.
Okay. So, Paul, if you could have Nick put together just a short summary, that'd be great. And then the parade, I was at the parade on Saturday as well. I stayed after for quite a while, till about 4 or 4:30. Afterwards, there was a festival. There was a beer garden area, and the chamber did a really great job of putting that on. There was music there, dancing, including from our judge, Lyons, was there doing line dancing and whatnot. So that was pretty cool. There were also booths set up there. And as I mentioned, I had met with Walmart on Thursday. I had an impromptu meeting with Fred Meyer, who had questions about Walmart and how they could be connected into the community as well. And I think that's pretty much all I have to report. I, too, want to underscore my thanks to the school district, all the different groups that were part of organizing and volunteering and whatnot for the parade. Also, that includes the chamber who put it on. I want to give my thanks also to all the people that attended. There were a lot of people out there, a lot of different groups that were marching in the parade. And finally, I want to underscore a big thank you to staff. You know, I saw a lot of staff members out there throughout the parade and stayed after long after I had left, I'm sure. So a thank you to everybody who was part of that. That's the extent of where I am for right now. And Gene.
Draft agenda for September 2nd, 2014.
Up to the right page.
Our announcements and presentations. We have a presentation by Volunteers of America. We have the consent agenda. Under unfinished business, we have the city web and social media presence. Under new business, we have authorized grant award contract and authorized mayor to sign contract for engine defense services. And council member reports, we have the Finance and HR Resources Committee.
Are there any questions on the September 2nd agenda? Okay, on to the extended agenda.
The only thing that was brought to my attention is that Councilmember Gearing will potentially be out on October 7th, so I've made note of that.
Okay. All right, sounds good. And we've got three lights.
It's not a...
Councilmember Cutterback.
Thought you were. I'm hoping that if another council member supports this, would like to have a discussion about our term limits ordinance sometime in the late fall or late September, October.
I'd second that.
Add it to the extended agenda.
Okay. So for that... would you like to have a short briefing from staff and then discussion?
So my hope is looking at the data that we had looked at a couple years ago when we looked at the ordinance and kind of bringing that back and looking at, you know, I think Gene had put together the last 20 years of elections and looked at the turnover rate and something like that. So to have that past data that we looked at, and then just have a discussion on, you know, how we think they're going in the last elections, and I would really like to revisit that ordinance. And then I don't know if staff can do this or if I need to, but to kind of look at other cities our size and see kind of what the norm is out there for term limits for a city of our size.
Okay. So what we'll do then is, given that scope, and I heard a second, the second agree with the information requested?
Thank you, Councilman Gary.
As long as it's not on October 7th. Otherwise, yeah. So sometime in October, maybe. Yeah.
October 7th?
He's gone. Yeah. I'm saying as long as it's not that night.
Okay,
that'd be great. Yeah.
Sounds good. So what we'll do is we'll go back, and during our management meeting on Thursday, we'll figure out, because there's some data there to gather and then putting together a staff briefing.
Sure.
We'll look at sometime between September 23rd and not October 7th, but to maybe the first Tuesday in November, just within that 4 or 5 Tuesday range. So okay.
Perfect.
All right.
And then I had one other. At one time when we started this council year at the beginning of January, we had a list of the countywide committees, and you know, there's Snohomish Cities or for tomorrow, and I don't know if we need to just revisit that and bring the list. And did we assign certain council members certain roles? I think I was assigned something, and to be honest, you know, I think we need to revisit that. And are we attending on these meetings as a city? Are we represented out there fully? I don't know. That's a question, I guess, to you, Mayor, and to the city administrator. I know that I have not attended anything.
Okay.
Countywide.
So are you saying that you'd like that on the agenda?
Just at least for information, a list of kind of what committee meetings countywide the city is kind of expected to have a representative, and whether we have one or not, who is attending or not.
So what we'll do is we'll follow up on that during our management team as well, and in the next two Tuesdays. We do have a three-day weekend and whatnot, so we'll go ahead and work with staff to produce a list of those meetings and the dates and times that are going on. You're talking about like Snohomish County tomorrow, PSRC, the health district, and so on and so
exactly.
forth.
Exactly. And I know there were a couple, the health district, we didn't have a representative, and I think the transit or the Sound Transit, we didn't have a representative this year.
If I may, didn't we
yeah.
combine with Sultan on something like where we offered, I think Mayor Eslick was going to cover both us and Sultan or something. I remember something
yeah,
to that
so
effect.
I would just like to revisit that
yeah,
for my own knowledge of kind of who's representing us at different committee meetings and what the expectation is if any of us are attending, just to revisit.
Okay. Sounds good. Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Councilmember Gamble.
So a question on the October 14th one, presentation we're going to talk to the police. Is that the makeup from, I guess, what's the topic there? It says presentation.
Hmm. October 14th, is that?
This is just part of a number of different entities that we invited to give a presentation, just like this evening's presentation.
Yeah.
So Monroe Public Schools, specifically Superintendent Hoover, was invited to come and present, and that was the date that he chose, considering that we were full up through September with presentations, so it worked out for that date. There's nothing specific that I'm aware of that we asked of him, certainly.
Can we, and that's the reason why I'm asking, because I actually was going to ask for something to be added, mm-hmm. and then when I saw that on there, would just be an update on, because I know they're doing a listening, you know, around the community right now, campaign, getting feedback on, you know, potential bonds and stuff. I know tonight at the social up at Chain Lake, you know, meeting the teachers, Dr. Hoover was there and was showing some of the plans that would be associated with that, the parents that were coming and had maps and charts and all that. So I'd be interested if they'd have any sort of feedback from their listening campaign by that particular time. Whereabouts are we in the process? I'm sure that's probably already on his agenda, but just because I know that we've all expressed this interest whatever we can process, so it would be nice to see where we're at. Maybe a timeline.
Okay.
Then, yeah.
We'll go ahead and follow up with
Dr.
yeah, with Ken Hoover and ask him if he can touch on that in his presentation on the 14th.
I do have some potential conflicts coming up. I am the 23rd of September. I will be on vacation. Actually, the week before the 16th, there is the potential I might not be here. I won't know until that.
September 16th?
The 16th, yeah. Okay. So gone the 23rd, that's vacation. The 16th is a maybe, but I won't know until I get there.
Okay, so we'll put you down as a question mark.
Yes.
For...
Yes.
Okay.
And then in the October time frame, the 21st and the 28th, that's elk season for all that know me.
Okay.
That's on the record, I guess.
Okay.
I don't have to.
All right, we'll add those to the...
I my vacation for this time of year. Everybody that knows me knows that.
All right, we'll add those to the extended agenda. Anything yeah. else?
No. And if we harvest early, I can be back sooner.
If you harvest early.
Right, so, there you go.
Okay. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. And someone else may have a comment. I'm actually based on an email that the city administrator sent to us earlier. I was wondering if it would be appropriate this evening to have an executive session for discussion of that email. And if so, I can cite the, once we're done with our business, there was an email that you'd sent. It'd be appropriate topic, perhaps with the price at which real estate might be offered, might be the reasonable one.
We don't have an answer yet.
We don't have an answer. There's no further information yet at this time.
Jane talked to him and wasn't able to get back with me the information. But I anticipate next week we will have that executive session and we will have something in regards to a different property as well.
Very good. I had the RC code just in case, but I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Anything else, Councilman?
No, I'm done. Thank you.
Councilman Hanford.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that. I was going to just for the record, I really enjoy elk jerky.
So, putting your order
while we're working away during the month of October, come November, you know.
Yeah. All right, no taking.
Expect to come back.
But snacks for the
there we go.
November.
There
and
we
December.
Go. Because I'm a planner, I'm looking ahead at the calendar in November and December. The November 25th meeting, because we have been enjoying. Scheduling out these different presentations. That's the week of Thanksgiving. I would prefer that we not meet that Tuesday if possible and just plan accordingly. If we have to, you know, granted, we'll meet, but my preference would be let's not plan something for that week. And the same with the 23rd, and then the following one would be what, the fifth Tuesday anyway, but December 23rd, let's definitely not plan anything there. That would be my preference. If we have to meet, we'll do it. But just for planning purposes, that would be my preference. Thank you.
And Liz, refresh my memory. Do we need to have a motion and a second to cancel a meeting?
For the record, it's appropriate to address that for the full council, just to make sure it is your meeting that you all agree to cancel those meetings or possibly reschedule. I would also just bring to your attention that the November 11th meeting will be canceled because it is a non-work day.
Yeah.
So whether you would like to contemplate, make an official motion to cancel it because it's a holiday, or if you'd like to contemplate a rescheduling. I think our code provides for the following day, the Wednesday, but of course you could perhaps discuss a different day if that made sense.
And our administrator, Jean, has suggested that perhaps we wait till we get closer to the date, just in case an emergency comes up.
Yeah, so. I agree.
All right. Is there anything else for the extended agenda? Okay, anything else for the good of the order? Mr. Brazel.
Thank you. I just wanted to remind council, if you know anybody that is looking to volunteer time, we still have some openings. We received one application for the Ethics Board, which would be being brought forward to the mayor if he hasn't received it already. But we didn't receive anybody for...
Civil service.
Thank you, civil service. So if you know of anybody that's interested in doing some public service, we'd love to have them.
Yes, and we will also have additional positions opening up at the end of September.
Well, we will be looking at the terms that end in December. We'll start looking at those in September, and so probably we will know and start advertising for those in October. We're hoping to have those people in before we're done for the year in December. So that's our goal.
Which, so if you know anybody, I don't know that we have the whole list.
Off the top of my head, there's probably about 6 or 7 terms ending this year from almost every single one of the boards and commissions. So there will be, there are a number, but we do have to look at the whole reappointment process if any of those people are eligible. I think most of them are, and that's kind of being built into the mayor's process. So that will determine what positions we actually are advertising for.
On occasion, people will move sometimes out of the city limits, and we find out when their term ends and we're looking for a new person and thinking about re-upping them or something. So we need to make certain that they haven't moved and things like that. But if you know of anybody, please, for the Civil Service Commission, we do have that opening. And I think that's all I have, except for perhaps a motion for adjournment. Councilmember Gehring.
So moved.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Gehring, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening.
Are these for us?
I think they're for you. I would say yes, sir, for you.
Yeah, everyone.